I like that.
All right. Good evening.
You had me doing like drums and everything back here, man. Sorry. Caught me off guard.
Oh, it's all good. Good evening, everybody. I'm Jacob Winograd. I'm the host of the Biblical Anarchy Podcast here in the LCI Green Room. And we've got another exciting episode for you tonight. So I have Brian Nichols with me from the Brian Nichols Show. Brian, how you doing tonight?
Doing good, Jacob. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. So the people who saw this get promo know what we're here to talk about, but we'll kind of, you know, get into a little bit of just staging the conversation here.
NCAA basketball, right? Is that?
Yeah.
We're talking about basketball today? Oh, no, no. Okay.
Yeah. No, we're here to talk about your favorite magazine, Reason, and their really fair and, you know, impartial coverage of Javier Milei and all that. No, so you know, I feel bad. Like, there are people at Reason I do like, and I don't mean to always be giving them crap on social media, and I should probably do a better job of celebrating the times they actually do good and giving them credit for it, so that the times I criticize them, it'll, you know, not come across as like I'm being a jerk. But this is another instance where Reason published something and a lot of libertarians got upset. I made a post kind of like piling on, so to speak, and you shared an article basically responding to this. So it's this article written, I forget the name of who wrote it.
No, it's me. Oh, you mean the other article?
Yeah, the Reason article.
Oh, Antonella.
Right.
Antonella Marti.
Yeah, Antonella Marti. Yep. So she wrote an op-ed for Reason. Now, I also feel like, you know, what partly needs to be spoken of here is that they didn't even label it well. And this is something that bugs me. You know, some people try to say, like, oh, well, they're a magazine, they shouldn't have to label things in the same way other people do. But I'm like, if you're going to have someone guest write an opinion piece, then, like, make that clear. Mm-hmm. Because when you share it from the official Reason account, no prefaces, no nothing. And it's just like, yeah, no context. It's just put up there for people to see. It's like they're going to come away with a certain conclusion. Maybe people think that it's not being fair, but I'm like, you know what? It's politics. I've been involved in this for a few years now in libertarian circles. And listen, I want to be fair, but the consistent standard I've learned is that anything you say can and will be used against you in the court of libertarian opinion. Yeah. So you better make sure everything you say is always well contextualized, or people are going to take it and run with it in all sorts of directions. But yeah, this article was basically making a claim that Javier Milei, who is a, so for people who don't know, who don't pay attention to politics, Javier Milei became the, what is it? Is it president or prime minister?
I'm pretty sure it's president.
President, yeah. I don't understand how other people's governments work. I can barely keep up with our own. And so I typically focus on American politics, and my foreign policy is basically like, I know where we are currently putting troops and bombs, but I don't typically study that much how other people's countries' governing systems work. I know they have more of like a parliamentary system than ours does. So, but yeah, Javier Milei became the president in Argentina, and he is a self-described Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist. And so this was obviously like very exciting for a lot of libertarians to see, you know, someone who is who's name dropping Hoppe and Rothbard and Mises, you know, and you know, I love, of course, everyone knows the famous afuera, where he just, exactly, you know, yep, what are we going to do with this department? Gone. Afuera. Yeah, it's just so. And so a lot of people were like, if he wins, this is going to be amazing. Since he's won, though, there have been a couple different groups of libertarians who have become increasingly critical of him. I do want to get into both camps. Your article kind of focuses, though, on this one camp, which does seem to be more from like the Cato Reason type libertarian, which is sort of like, you know, framing Milei as less of a libertarian and more of like a Trumpian MAGA style populist.
Correct.
And even potentially an authoritarian. So let's get into, you know, what your thoughts are just on, you know, Javier Milei as a whole. And then we'll kind of get into the article in terms of like what your response was when he won. And, you know, just kind of without even like, again, we can just kind of do the zoomed out view for now. How do you think he's done so far since he's, you know, stepped into his role?
As good as anybody in his role could do. I think when given the task that was at hand, and it frankly still is at hand, right, Jacob? I mean, you can't look at someone like Javier Milei and say he's got a magic wand. That's just not how it works. It's not real life. Like, and I think this is part of where the difference comes from. I you're right. It's more of like this Cato establishment kind of mentality that I focus on in the article. But there's also kind of this like pie in the sky mentality as well that we have to really come to grips with. I think with a lot of libertarians is that there is no magic wand. Like, we cannot make libertopia, whatever that may look like in their perfect world, overnight. It's not realistic. So I think when we look at Javier Milei, we have to go in with the context of that in mind. I mean, Argentina, their currency was inflating, like, was it 300%? I mean, the money was losing value literally day after day. That's how hot their economy was and how bad things were getting. And I again, we had to look at the context of him walking into now this role. He slashed, what was it, nine of the 18 ministries that were there. Like, we're seeing steps in the right direction. And frankly, they're huge steps, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. And I think, again, this goes to a greater point in the greater liberty movement, is that we cannot let perfection be the enemy of good. We have to continue this progress towards Liberland, right? Like, I forget who it was that made the analogy, but we're all in this big, big spaceship going towards Liberland or Liber Planet, whatever it may be. We're on our way. And some of us, we have different values, right? Like, maybe you need to get off at Minarchy Land. You need to get off at, you know, Ancapistan, wherever that may be. And that's fine. Like, but understand we're still on the bus going towards Libertopia, right? And we have a long way to get there. So before you start trying to jump off, let's try to get towards our destination first. And I think that's where we have to kind of take a step back and say, what's he doing down in Argentina? He's taking them in the right direction. And again, I can't say this enough. It will not happen overnight. Frankly, it cannot happen overnight. That's the way that the bureaucracies have been built. In some cases, we need to go a little bit of a slower of a pace. I was in the world of, I still am in the world of sales and executive leadership in the telecommunications world. And like, if you were to go in and you're redoing a sales department, right? If you were just to go and completely do a complete 180, you're going to lose a lot of trust with the existing staff. Now, maybe that's what you're called to do, but businesses are obviously different than countries, but you have to get the populace on board too. So that means in Argentina, he has to be a populist to get the populace on board with the message. And that's what he's been doing. So again, I think we have to give him more time, continue to plant the seeds of liberty, now doing so through the bully pulpit, and actually have not just a substantive change in the approach to selling liberty, as he's had success doing, but now implementing liberty and showing people the value of liberty, not just from it sounding good to now it's actually going to be good in their real lives. Did I answer your question? I hope.
Yes, you did. And this, you touch on something that, you know, this article being released.
By the way, Jacob, I do want to say, I do not dislike reason. I want to preface that too, because I think there is a group of libertarians who just like to crap on reason. And I'm not one of those. I remember my first message I ever sent to like a libertarian was when I was 22. And that was me messaging Nick Gillespie, telling him how much I appreciated Reason Magazine. I've had Nick on my show. I message him frequently. Like, I really appreciate him and the work that a lot of other good libertarians do there. But to your point earlier, when you do pieces like this with no context and it just gets published as though Reason Magazine, Libertarian Magazine, is saying this about libertarian president, only libertarian president ever, it just doesn't look good. Sorry to interrupt.
Right. No, so this is good. So this is setting the stage for a couple of different things that I feel like we should talk about in conjunction with, you know, going through some of the things in your article. And one of them is, you know, we should take a little bit of time here. And I mentioned at the beginning, I don't hate Reason. There are several people at Reason I actually really like. So, for example, I really like Liz Wolf and Zach, whose last name I always forget because it's like starts with a W.
Weiss Miller.
Something weird. I always have to look up, but I always
like
forget
you, it. Zach.
Yeah, I like Zach. I like Liz. I appreciate that they have been fair, even in their criticisms. They've been fair in hearing out sort of like the more, you know, kind of like Mises Caucus, more like Rothbardian, like, you know, edgy radical side of the libertarian movement and party, which I kind of, you know, mostly side with. And even when they're being critical, I often think that like they're not doing so from a place of bad faith. And there's actually a lot of things that I would say that we would agree on. I do like I always love Reason's like little comedy skits. Those are like the best. They do little
Andrew Heaton. He is an all-star for sure. They used to do a lot with JP Sears too. I'm not sure if they've done that in any recent months, but he was a regular there for a while, I believe.
Yeah, and I like Nick Gillespie as a person, insofar as I think he's a very likable person. I do sometimes think that his he's a very good journalist, right? And but sometimes I feel like he will throw softballs to people that I wish he would throw fastballs to, and then he throws some fastballs to people that I think are a little bit unfair. But you know, that's my bias, and I can admit that. But overall, it's like, listen, I don't want to live in a world where, like, I'm not rooting against Reason. It's like I'm rooting for Reason to be a positive face of libertarianism into the public sphere. And I'm not saying they do a bad job overall.
It's steel sharpening steel, man. That's all it is.
Yes. And so it's just the criticism needs to be able to go both ways. But one thing and even with people like Liz and Zach, I've tried to talk with them a couple times about this just on like on Twitter or X, to be like, I want you guys to understand this one line of criticism that you guys don't see, you think is unfair. They even said, correct, we don't know why there are people who are really critical of us that like were, you know, they carrying water for the regime or being useful idiots for the state, or, you know, like say, and they're like, well, what are we, you know, they're like, well, we're journalists, right? We're libertarian, but we're journalists. And I'm like, okay, but to me, that seems like, I guess my problem is, if Reason wants to be just this nice, like independent news outlet that is very favorable to libertarians and lets libertarians publish on them, but they're not going to themselves be like partisan for libertarians, that's fine, but they need to like stick to that lane. But I don't think that's what they're doing. I think they want to be a libertarian voice while also being fair and not like, you know, they want to report the truth no matter what. That's fine, but then understand that things like the article that you were responding to, I think can sometimes contribute to why people tend to think that, you know, the steel man, the position of the people who are critical of Reason, is that they think that Reason tends to, in the worst possible moment, decide to criticize things going on in the libertarian world that are positive, and instead they criticize them in a way that is sort of repeating what the establishment's talking points are.
Yes.
And that seems to lend credence then
it feels
to
like
the establishment's talking points.
Yeah, it feels like being a useful idiot almost. And I'm not saying that that's what Reason is, right? I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying, but that is what it feels like. It's like, why are you making this argument right now in the same way that the establishment media is making as well? When I know you know better, right? And I think that's where it comes from. It's like, if you don't know better, you should know better. Like, we are already facing an uphill battle, and we have an obligation as a greater libertarian movement to not get in each other's way. Like, when you see a libertarian, even if they are not a card carrying big L libertarian, if you see them doing good, call it out for good. Right? Like that's what we're doing right now, is trying to bring libertarianism to more people. So when I see Reason going after Javier Milei, and again, not saying it's Reason, I'm seeing articles from Reason or articles from Reason going after Vivek Ramaswamy just because, like, they're go after specific things, but understand that you're doing so at the right now, the exact same time that CBS, NBC, CNN are also doing the exact same thing. So why? Why are we doing this? Why are we making it more difficult for ourselves? Let's celebrate the areas we can. Like, and this is the part that also kind of drives me crazy, is that libertarians, or that Reason Magazine purports to be this entity that wants a big tent libertarianism. And I mean, go listen to the Reason Roundtable, which I listen to literally every week because I want to hear what they're talking about. And I want to hear the way they're talking about it. But that's more or less what that show is, right? You got Patrick Suderman, you got Matt Welsh, you got Catherine Mangu Ward, and you got Nick Gillespie. You got pretty much all the different flavors of libertarianism, with Nick having more of what I would consider our type of libertarianism, though to your point, you do have some differences, right? And I definitely have some differences with Nick politically as well. But if we're going to be a big tent libertarian party, that means that when we have folks like Vivek Ramaswamy going out and actually promoting some really like basic libertarian values and policies as a solution and parts of his campaign plan, let's celebrate that. And let's build coalitions with people who are maybe our 85, 80% ally. Like,
and if we're going to criticize things, like, listen, there are things that I think Reason can and should criticize about Vivek, for example, but
like going to war with Mexico.
Him for the things he's not good on, rather than going after the things that he happens to be libertarianish on, and then using rhetoric that matches what the corporate media is going to be saying about him. It's like, oh, he's an isolationist because he doesn't want, you know, to send unlimited money to Ukraine to fight Russia. It's like, yeah, if we're criticizing Vivek for the things that like the corporate media would criticize us for, we're making our job harder as libertarians. And that's
why we get 5% if we have a good day, a good election. How many libertarians are in office right now? Like, I know we always like to tout, you know, all these libertarian success stories, but like they are the exceptions to the rule. I will forever promote those exceptions to the rule, but understand that that's not something for us to be cocky about. We're like, oh, look at us. We won 120 elections last election cycle, or whatever the number may be. And then Republicans and Democrats are like, yeah, we won the rest, right? Which is all of them.
And half the time it's like, and you guys won the positions that we didn't really care about and didn't. Because to be honest, like I remember years ago, when I first got into politics here in Pennsylvania, there was a huge number of elected libertarians in Pennsylvania, which inflated the nationwide numbers.
Yep.
And listen, I'm not saying that was a bad thing, but like the context was we ran a lot of people in uncontested races.
Yep.
Which, listen, take what they're going to give you, right? Like, I'm a big sports guy. If you're going to play, if you're playing football, take what the defense gives you. If they're giving you the 5 yard out, take the 5 yard out. But like,
if they're running prevent defense, run the ball up the middle.
Right, exactly.
If you're running the prevent defense, keep running the ball up the middle. I.e., I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. That's literally what every team did to us the end of the season. But that's a different story for a different day.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page there. I will say to put a pin on this. So Austrian capital duration theory.
I literally saw that come in, and I wanted to bring that up because that I think is very accurate. Actually.
So I think that is fair. So to read the comment for those who are going to listen just audio only later, this comment says they just wanted to have an article to say we published both sides of the debate just in case things do not work out in Malay's Argentina. I do think that's fair, but then that comes into question of how are you presenting this? Because this was not presented as a op-ed. It was not presented as, you know, like in the context of here is someone who is critical of Malay and these views. It's like when you're reading something from a magazine or from a newspaper or from a website, people are going to take that, unless you are very clear, as being your perspective. That's just like fair or unfair. That is how things work. Again, when I worked with the Mises Caucus, we weren't even an editorial, right? If someone from the Mises Caucus who was just a member said something on Twitter, their comments would be held as, well, this is what the entire Mises Caucus thinks, right?
Yep.
So like, that's not fair. And I would complain about that, but that is
here, Jacob, add what I just shared here on the screen really quick. So this, as he brings it up, this is the actual Reason article, just so folks can get context in terms of how it does present, right? It looks just like it's Reason magazine saying, is Javier making Javier Milei making Argentina great again? And then it goes into he's looking like populist and authoritarian. There's nothing here signifying that this is an opinion article. You know, you scroll down, it starts telling, you know, you can understand, you know, this is going to be more of a narrative because she starts telling a story, but like nowhere in here, like I'm just going to scroll to the bottom. Like these are the tags here, tells you who she is, and that's it. Like there's no, this is an opinion versus
or like guest piece, or
this is my article. And like it's in the opinion art, like it's found in the opinion piece. Like that's where you find this article, is in our opinions section. So like that's the difference. That's exactly the difference. Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. So to the other thing I wanted to say here, and then I do want to get into the meat of your article. I mean, not too much. I want people to read it. But I want to, you know, give people a little bit to whet their appetite and touch on the main points. But the other thing is that in terms of like libertarian purity tests, right? I've been, anyone who's been following me for like the last few months knows that I've been like in the thick of it in the like ongoing libertarian purity tests, mainly around things going on at the border, and also just in the broader context of like what should libertarians be advocating for in terms of political strategy. And I understand that there are good faith disagreements in terms of like, well, is there a role for, say, you know, there's some people who think, you know what, if a state government is doing something that is authoritarian, we should use the federal government to stop it. Then there's people go, no, we should always advocate for decentralization and not, you know, use the federal government to stop a smaller government, even if the smaller government's doing something we don't like. There are good faith disagreements along the border. Should we have them open, closed, somewhere in between? I think that it is one thing to have those conversations and you know, hopefully we're all approaching those in good faith and kind of acknowledging that like none of us have a perfect roadmap for how to get to a libertarian society, because if that perfect roadmap existed, we would, you know, be well on our way to it.
Yep.
And look around, we're not there yet. So it's clear we don't have the perfect roadmap.
We're
but
not.
Then what I don't appreciate is when differences in strategy get used as the evidence to argue against someone's core beliefs and to say, well, you, because you support X political strategy, you are no longer a real libertarian. And this is important because this is going to play into one of the criticisms that are being laid at Milei, is that like, well, he's an anarcho-capitalist, but I think some people were almost expecting like, all right, well, unless he pulls out the magic Rothbard button and turns Argentina into, you know, a Bitcoin and Capistan paradise overnight.
And Capistanina.
Yeah, right. It's like, so this gets into real, we should actually be studying what Milei is doing, and not from the perspective of expecting he's going to get everything right, but this is a good opportunity to see what will work and what won't work. But what we should all acknowledge is that there's no, and you, excuse me, you mentioned this on the, at the outset that, excuse me, got something stuck in the windpipe there. You mentioned at the outset that, you know, it's incredibly tough for someone in that position to know, like you don't exactly have the power to just slash everything. And then you also have to weigh that in terms of like, there are things you could do, but they might sacrifice your ability to do other things. And so, you know, I think we need to grade, you know, we should not give him a free pass, right? Be like, yo, he said he's an ANCAP, and if he, you know, starts, you know, locking everybody up in jail tomorrow or something, then like, you know, criticize that. But but we should also grade, I think, with a little bit of a I don't know, like a scale of sort to understand that this is an uphill battle, and really what he's doing is kind of unprecedented.
Correct.
I would say in the modern age.
It would be like a D3. Here, we're going to go back to the football analogy. I told you it was going to be a sports podcast. So it's like a D3 quarterback coming out of college, no-name college. You know, he put up numbers, goes undrafted, goes on a practice squad. For whatever weird reason, you have two players ahead of him, backup and the starter, go down. And now he's thrust into the position to lead the team, right? Like, what are we doing here? Is he going to have any success whatsoever? This is all brand new territory. And the fact that right now where Javier Milei is like, he is that D3 quarterback who came up out of nowhere. And now he's actually having some semblance of success. It should blow everybody away. Like, we need to take a moment and appreciate this is a D3 quarterback playing, you know, starting off the game. And I guess, what was your main question, Jacob? I'm sorry. I was trying to make my fun analogy. I got lost in the weeds.
Well, it wasn't really so much of a question. It's just like setting that this is actually part of what you open your article with, is to say, we need to be fair, understanding that there's no perfect you know, strategy test. For yeah. like, yeah, a purity test for
it's Monday morning. Here, we'll go back to the football. It's Monday morning right. quarterbacking, right?
Exactly.
It's a bunch of libertarians who online can watch politics and from the confines of the comforts of their living room, tell exactly what they would do and why it would work. And now we have somebody who's actually doing it, right? Like this person is now in a position, they are doing it. They are leading by example and they're showing it in action. But it takes the understanding that we are not in a libertarian world, right? Like we used to have the idea that, oh, everybody's a libertarian if they just realized it. And COVID, I think, answered that question very clearly. That's not the case. Everybody is not a libertarian. A lot of people will actually say, government, yes, you can lock me down arbitrarily for an undisclosed amount of time and tell me I'm either essential or non-essential. Like, okay, that happened. And I saw that and I couldn't unsee it because in sales, we teach people, once you see it, you can't unsee it. So once we all saw that, I think we all had to put away the notion, okay, people are generally libertarian. With that understanding, we have to play sales. That's what my whole show is about, is helping people sell liberty. How do we actually meet people where they're at on the issues they care about and get them to like be able to help bring new libertarians to the world? We have to first go in understanding that people are not libertarian. Let's not make our job harder. Let's start trying to find people to bring in from, you know, that are easy grabs. I look right now, you know, people who are more politically right-leaning are going to be more of an easy grab to libertarianism. Are they going to be 100% libertarian? No. But again, we're not in a libertarian world. So we have to start going after the low-hanging fruit, which is going to be people who are more leaning libertarian. And then with that understanding, try to get as much libertarian stuff into action by getting libertarian elected officials into office and incrementally moving the pendulum to more of a pro-liberty position. That's going to take time. And it takes effort. It takes a different way of doing things, but also it takes an understanding that the person who's sitting in their room commenting on everything, saying how exactly they would do it and why it would work, that doesn't work. You have to actually go out and test your ideas in the real world. That's why like I wanted to bring this idea of selling liberty to the market in libertarianism, because if we don't know how to effectively sell our ideas, it doesn't matter how good our ideas are, right? Like if our ideas are the best ideas in the world, it doesn't matter if there's nobody to buy it. And nobody's going to buy it. Nobody's going to be listening to us. So first we have to meet them where they're at, find out what actually matters to them, and then bring libertarian solutions to them, but not do it through the, hey, here's a book, read it. And you know, force feed 9 Murray Rothbard or Milton Friedman books down their throat. That doesn't work. What works is helping solve problems by offering tangible right. solutions. So that's why we have to start bringing more solutions to the table that are libertarian in actual practice. So to the people who want the purity, right? I'm going to challenge you to get out and actually start building things that you want to see change. Be that change, because if we are going to start selling liberty effectively and trying to get people into elected office, we need to have something to show to people saying you can trust us. And if we don't have that, then they're just going to be blindly going after one person's word. And one person's word doesn't really mean too much. We need to have tangible things we can say, here you go. This is what liberty does. And let the benefits show for themselves, which right now, Javier Milei is doing in Argentina. He's taking incremental steps, which people are going to see the benefits from because we know they work, right? And that's the difference. It takes time because it's Andrew Breitbart, right? Culture is downstream from politics. This is almost like the whole thing showing that Javier Milei was a figure in culture and now he's in politics, but now the politics is going to be impacting the culture because it's going to be directly impacting the people that were impacted by the culture, Javier Milei, in the first place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think our job is always to like meet people where they're at. And some people, listen, like when I first encountered libertarianism, it didn't take me long. Like it clicked like that. Other people, you gotta just, it takes time. Like in our gut, like, you know what, like just pick an issue that they care about and be like, well, maybe I can't get you here, but like you're here. Can I get you like, you know, just a little bit closer to me, a little right. bit closer. Right. And that's the game, I think. So we talked a little about the purity tests there. So this person who wrote this article, Anatella Marti, you know, she talked about in this article how, yeah, so Javier references Mises and Rothbard and Milton Friedman and like people are, you know, really excited about Javier Milei's presidency. She said that she's not enthusiastic. She's born and raised in Argentina. And then she says, you know, that she sees him as a threat to Argentina to the global liberty movement. So this isn't even like starting out as Javier Milei is like a libertarian, but here's a couple of things he's getting wrong. It's like, no, he's a threat to Argentina and the global liberty movement. She says that she sees him as a self-obsessed populist with a savior complex who's just kind of like pandering to libertarians.
Yep.
And then she says that he raises taxes, he's escalating the drug war, restricting social freedoms, threatening his political opponents, and appointing political hacks from the previous corrupt administrations to positions of power. So that's the way her article starts out.
She also argues that he is completely unflexible or inflexible, and he does not change or he will not work with people at all. And yet then she complains that he brings people who are non-libertarian that maybe are more left-leaning to his cabinet positions. It's like, do you want your cake to eat it too, Antonella?
It reminds me of like when the Mises caucus took over the Libertarian Party, and we'd get it from both sides. It'd be like, you guys are a bunch of alt-right, you know, Trumpers. And then there's the Rage Against the War Machine rally, and they're like, how dare you work with communists and people on the left? And I'm like, wait. Help me figure this out. Like, anyway, so go into your response.
What was your question again? Sorry.
Oh, well, so what would you say to, I cut you off there, I'm sorry, but what would you say to, you know, her accusations of Javier not being a real libertarian and not just like doing incrementalism a bad way, but that he's, you know, like, we'll take it one at a time. He's raising taxes. Right. I know you kind of touched on this in your article, you know, so people might be able to maybe steel man an argument here.
Yep.
They'd say, well, OK, yeah, incrementally lowering taxes, we can get that. But raising taxes, if he's raising taxes, how can that at all be justified from a libertarian perspective? So, you know, what would your response be to that?
Yeah. So we go back to the 1990s, which actually were a pretty darn good decade, if I do say so myself. And you look to see when the only time in recent history the United States has ever had a budget deficit. How did that happen? It happened with Bill Clinton and this idea of triangulation. And the idea of really, I mean, it was a sales pitch, right? To work with the Republicans and to more or less get specific action for specific areas that were important to the populace at that time. And one of them was looking at, there was the crash that happened in the 90s and a reaction to that. So you look at the only time we've had that deficit, it was because there was really this understanding between a Democrat and a Republican, Democrat in the White House, Republican in the Congress, and that was led by Newt Gingrich. And they worked together to get this into action, and it required negotiation. Now, this was also with good stuff in mind, which we don't get anymore. Most of our bipartisan or, you know, cooperation in Congress turns into more and more spending. But this was one of the first times it actually worked, because Bill Clinton also was a much more he's a much more savvy president when it comes to sales. And he worked, you know, Dick Morris is one of the great political minds from a strategy standpoint of, you know, the past probably 40, 50 years. And he was really one of the ones who helped coin this idea of really focusing on these core issues and making them central points of not just Clinton's campaign, but working with the Republicans and getting wins there. And if you're able to get the people happy and you know, show some successes where it really matters to them, or at least they think it matters to them, then it helps create more of a success, not just politically, but also you start to see, you know, things get better. And I think that's kind of what Javier Milei is having to do right now, because he's going in as basically one libertarian, and the rest of the Argentinian government was all pretty much left-leaning in some way, shape, or form. So he, by just the very nature of how government works, and again, this is the other thing we have to acknowledge, government exists, and we have to understand that in order to get libertarian ideas into policy, we have to actually work in the systems as they are. So we just can't go in, again, and wave that magic wand. Like, and I know there's like this kind of subset of libertarian culture that like wants this like libertarian dictator, but no, like, no, we don't want that. We really, really don't want that. Like, I would love to have, you know, a magical world where Ron Paul is the king of everything and makes everything wonderful, but that's not real life. And I think that's the other thing too, is we have to live in the real world. If our ideas can't exist in the real world and we can't get things enacted in the real world, then we have to really think about how we present them, or at least what issues we're focusing on and what ones we're going to wait. And I think you mentioned this, right? Like, weighing successes, like, we have to really weigh the different things that we're getting into action and prioritize, like, high value stuff. And I think that's what Javier Milei is doing. Like, he's prioritizing high value stuff. And yes, there are going to be areas that he's going to have to negotiate. He's going to have to work with folks hyper left in order to get certain things into action. I think a lot of it's strategy too, you know, having people who maybe are more left leaning in his administration that he can then leverage to help get more policies negotiated in a favorable way for his side. I think that's also part of it too, is you have to be able to play the game. And libertarians don't like that, right? Like, we don't like that there's a game that has to be played. We want things to be done by principle. We want things to be done by a code. Like, don't hurt people. Don't take their stuff. Property rights, non-aggression principle. Like, all this stuff that we've instituted into not just a political idea, but a way of life. And that's not government. And that's just the reality. And we have to take a step back sometimes and acknowledge that there is a fundamental reality that we have to address first, before we start getting these you know, bucket list, wish list items onto the plate. Let's focus on, like, some really important stuff first. And that's why I think, like, picking one or two issues that we prioritize and make those the main focus are the best strategy to actually have, like, liberty win effectively from a populist standpoint. Because as we are a democracy, it is important to be popular, because that's how you actually win an election. So,
right. And there's so many moving pieces to this calculation. I mean, to some extent, one, I don't know enough about the specifics of the Argentinian economy to say this is the case, but one could imagine that, you know, there's a situation where cutting taxes could be detrimental if the cutting of taxes just led to more printing of money, right? Because inflation can sometimes be, listen, taxation is theft. Like, I'll repeat that banter all day long. But sometimes inflation is that invisible tax that is sometimes more destructive, right? Because sometimes the immediate impact of taxes is not as felt by people as it is when they go to the store and the prices have skyrocketed. I mean, people have kind of seen that over the last few years.
And like, really bad too. Like, they're really feeling it now. Yeah.
Right. So I'm saying there's a lot of considerations that go into this. And again, I think it's we have to be careful with applying certain purity tests, and we have to, again, I think, keep in mind that every step along the way to where we're trying to go, we're going to be navigating a territory that's not only not the final destination, but it's not, as you said, it's not operating by the rules of a libertarian, ethical or legal order, right? It's like, you know, Keynesian economics and statism and socialism and central planning, like, these are all these, like, you know, you can almost think of them as like, it's like a land of fantasy, right? And it's like trying to, like, and that's kind of what we're doing. We're trying to get people to wake up from what I would almost, you know, call the belief in the state, like this sort of like societal delusion, right? but it's like, okay, like, it is a societal delusion, but everyone's playing it and we're the minority. So if we try to just, like, ignore what is their reality, it's not going to work well for us. We have to, you know, a lot of people use Lord of the Rings analogies, which those are good. I also like the movie The Matrix. It's like, you know what? They had to at times go into the Matrix and, like, do things within the Matrix that operated according to the rules of the Matrix in their ultimate attempt for, like, we're trying to get people to wake up to this artificial reality and get them pulled out of it. And so, there's, like, you know, there's a point of, and listen, if you don't want to play the game, if you don't think you can play the game well, that's fine. Don't. But some people think that they can, and we shouldn't be tearing them down. We should be cheering them on and only be, you know, making fair criticisms and criticisms that are aimed at, like, you know, I can imagine an article being written where, instead of, you know, I'm afraid of Milei because I think he's an authoritarian and look at all these bad things he's doing, like raising taxes, could have been like, you know, hey, Javier Milei won, and that's really great. Let's pump the brakes because this is an uphill battle. He's raised taxes. Let's talk about that. That's something that we could be critical of, but let's examine the pros. Like, there's a way that you could sort of hold Milei to an account to be like, you know, this is something that we should be paying attention to while also like having a wait and see approach. Like that's, to me, that doesn't seem ultimately, you know, that wouldn't have been an article that would have been reacted to like this was. Another thing that she gets into, and then you kind of respond to in your article, is what he's doing in response to the things going on with the gangs and all the drug lords and stuff and things that are you know contributing to crime and violence in Argentina. And some people think that he's being too heavy-handed in his response, you know, and this is very complicated, right? Because this is actually in a way, you know, very mixed in with US policy, right? Because it's our war on drugs policy that really created these cartels and created these
100%
these narco gangs and stuff. And so, you know, here in America, it's easy for us to say like, yeah, well, we need to, you know, end the war on drugs, stop locking people up, but we're not the ones who are dealing with a lot of the consequences of the war on drugs, right? Like with few exceptions, our cities, although they have high crime, they're not being overrun with cartels, right? It's not a reality.
Just like not, no, that's all.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, we have our problems, but they're different. We do have gang violence and whatnot, but I think it's a little bit of apples to oranges in terms of the scale and the intensity. And we also know like our government has been able to handle, like anytime our government actually wants to clean the streets, we've seen that they can, but the Argentinian government, you know, you could say is maybe not as, you know, superior in terms of like a, because put it this way, as a ANCAP, as a libertarian, we view governments as almost just another gang, right? So we can almost look at this as like, these are warring gangs. But the problem is in Argentina, these gangs are much closer probably in their relative size. I mean,
like,
Jacob,
let's think about it this way, right? Like, if a libertarian gets elected tomorrow, here, I said Lars Mapstead on my show, it's going to be airing Friday, I think, somewhere in there. So I'll be releasing that soon. But anyways, let's just say Lars wins, right? Just for the fun of it. That'd be great. Will he win? Probably not. And I think he knows that too. But like, let's just say he won. What happens next? We have $34 trillion in debt? $33 trillion in debt? How are we going to pay that back? What are we going to do? How are we going to tangibly get things into action like right now to start getting that cut down? Like what can we do? And that is the reality. Like that is what Javier Milei has to deal with, right? Like he has imagine if it's like Republican and Democrat and you had a libertarian president, right? Like imagine getting things done and how difficult that would be. Now there are probably certain things you can build some coalitions on and get some things done, but now imagine that you have to tackle that $34 trillion debt. What are you going to do? Like what can we do? And that's where the questions start to raise. Like, would we have to raise taxes, or would we just focus on like, you know, complete decentralization? Like what would we do? Here's the other part to that equation. It has to be realistic in terms of actually like getting people on board with it, because back to the point earlier, if people aren't on board with it, it doesn't matter what we do. Because I think it's Tim Pool uses the example of like, imagine a clown showed up at your house and he was like, give me all your money. And you're like, no, you're a clown. But what if that clown showed up at your house with a gun and was like, give me all your money, right? Like that's the difference there. But we don't want people looking at that person like they're a clown, even if they do have a gun. Like that's the point. We don't want to get to that level. So what can we do to help get people actually on board with libertarian solutions that are tangible? That's the question that we need to start answering. And it goes back to what I said earlier. We need to start answering those questions now. And by that, we do that by building libertarian solutions now. So like if you see a problem, start building a solution to it. If you're passionate about that and you have a certain skill set, and this is like just a mean reality check to some libertarians. You are not meant for the world of politics. You may be a libertarian, but like, again, politics, back to what we were talking about earlier, is a game. If you are really passionate about like a libertarian cause, then like start focusing on that specific thing, but don't feel that you need to go into the political arena, because that's not what the political arena is for. Like, I don't know about you, Jacob, but I look at a lot of like the candidates from yesteryear, and if they had a big L next to their name, they almost certainly were a Big L loser. And it, I hate to say that, but that was the case in a lot of like, especially like really lower level elections and like local elections. There are people who just running because they wanted to have that blue check mark. But back when Twitter would give it to you, if you were, you know, running for elected office, and they would have like 900 followers. And it's like, why are we doing this? Why are we just running, you know, anybody for anything? Like you need to have a vetting out process, run people who are good candidates, but that might be a different conversation for a different podcast. But yeah, hey, that's why Javier Milei won, because he did things differently. So
yeah. I think there's things to learn there. And I think, you know, one of the things that I find frustrating, whether we're talking about Milei or even, again, this applies to even lessons here in American politics and things that libertarians need to consider, is that although I agree with the sentiment that it is wrong to sacrifice liberty for security, the truth of the matter is that people do ultimately value security more than liberty. And if you're trying to sell liberty to people, but you're basically tell them, you know what, you're just going to have to ignore all of these major threats to your safety, because I can't do anything about them without, you know, violating my libertarian principles, they're going to go, well, then I don't care about your libertarian principles, because you're telling me that you want me to be unsafe, that you don't care about, you don't, that, you know. And I love a lot of my fellow libertarians who I disagree with, but it's like, I said this on Twitter like a month ago, and I've been repeating it ad nauseum, so my listeners will get tired of me saying it again, but like, libertarianism needs virtue. Like, yes, I understand libertarianism is a thin political philosophy. I like to say libertarianism is, it's not aggression principle, it's private property rights, and we should try to be careful not to distort it to be more than it is. But at the same time, it's like, the reason why we are libertarians is because we know that the not aggression principle, we know that a adherence to private property rights is what is the means of creating a society that best promotes the things that we care about. It promotes human flourishing. It promotes peace. It promotes the well-being of others. And at the heart of why we are libertarians is not like we're in love with private property rights, right? Like, it's like, I'm in what I care about, and this is especially as a Christian, what I care about are people. And I want, like, I know long-term, for people to be safe, for people to flourish, we need liberty. But when people are staring down, in many cases, like here in Argentina, literally staring down the barrel of the gun of rampant violence on the streets, then, yeah, you kind of, like, maybe need to, and I think this was sort of, as much as people give late Rothbard a bad rap, I think this was kind of what late Rothbard was talking about when he was kind of, like, in his writings about, like, you know, right-wing populism and whatnot, and the whole, like, unleash the police. Yeah. I'm not saying he parsed everything in the best way possible, but the idea that, like, yeah, if your streets are overrun with crime, you might need to first solve the crime before you start implementing other libertarian policies that maybe address the root causes. It's kind of like in war, like, you kind of need to sometimes do triage and, like, address the gaping, bleeding wound before you get back to the battlefield and start actually trying to do something else. And so it's like, you know, it's not like Milei took over a state that was already on its way to libertarianism and that was already relatively peaceful. Like, he took over a pretty messed up country that's been torn apart.
Country. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we need to cut him a little slack in terms of, like, he's probably looking at, like, people are, you know, if people are dying on the streets, they're not going to care about the other things I have to say. So I need to get them. People don't respond well when they're afraid. So I think he needs to try to win the trust of the people more, and let them know, like, listen, I'm going to keep you safe, and then he can work more towards long-term solutions after that.
Or at the very least, understand that that's what sells, right? And yeah, everything is sales. We always have to remember that. Whether you're selling an idea, a service, a good, a product, you know, an ism, like libertarianism, or people are selling communism, socialism, people sell it. It's being sold. You are either selling or you're being sold to. And like, it's every day, right? Like, right now, Jacob and I are selling to you. Like, we are selling to you our perspective. And we're doing so trying to articulate it in a way that creates value. And at the end of the day, like, that is what we have to really remember, is that we have to focus on creating value. Like if we are just going to be pointing at things and saying bad, like what are we doing? We have to start not just creating value, but learning how to sell it. And again, I go back to what I was talking about earlier. You have to meet people where they're at. You just said it, Jacob. Like if there is rampant crime, you have to address the elephant in the room first. That's like actually, so I teach sales teams, and that's the sales strategy I teach. It's called elephant in the room. Like what is the elephant in the room that you address? And you have to first identify what's your customer's elephant in the room. So like, what's the elephant in the room for the customer right now? If the customer's the voter, what's the number one thing they care about? Like, I mean, it's pretty close, but I'd say it's going to be the economy or immigration. What do you think? Like, am I pretty close?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So if libertarians aren't addressing the elephant in the room, we're the mouse, dude.
Right. If we're talking about abolishing driver's licenses right now,
they're not going to pay attention. Because guess what? We're showing that we don't care. We don't value what other people value. We want you to value what we value. We want you to buy what we're selling, but guess what? They're not buying. And we have to understand why.
Yeah. There's this great sales thing I learned when I was in sales. It's like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
100%. And that's the other thing too, is that like you don't, I've had to teach this a million times and like every time it still blows me away. Like you don't create care by like giving people a white paper. Like if you're selling a super important SaaS product or whatever, like that's not care. What's care is like the human element. And God, man, libertarians, like especially we lack that human element at times. Like, and pardon the expression, there's like this autistic focus that we have on adherence to principles that we get in the way of trying to actually talk to people as people. We look at them as a challenge. Like how can I use my libertarianism to out-logic and out-reason you know, whatever.
As if it's like, if we all just win 1,000 libertarian arguments online, then we'll have libertarian future tomorrow. It's like, that's not, like that's as bad a libertarian strategy as like the old LP strategy of just run as many libertarians as possible. Step two, question mark, step three, you know, liberty in our lifetime. It's just, we need to, I love how Dave Smith puts it. He's like, we need to make normal people a little bit more autistic and libertarians a little bit less autistic. So
100% though. 100%. And I just went to the Libertarian Party of Indiana's convention to teach them exactly that. And believe it or not, I was met with some skepticism. I was a little surprised, and then I realized I wasn't really surprised.
Right. One thing I want to touch on here at the end, someone put in the comments, which is something that wasn't really in this article, but it is something you hear from some of the critics of Javier. So someone said it was because he brown-nosed Israel early on. So there are some people who are critical of Milei because he is, not parroting Scott Horton on foreign policy takes, just put it that way. And don't get me wrong, like I don't agree with the things that Milei has said. I guess I don't, just my perspective on is that I don't particularly find them too troubling because like he's not running for president of America and doesn't have anywhere near the amount of influence on foreign policy as an American president would. And then like I also just wonder, I don't know, like this is just my theory, but I'm like, you know, if I was an ANCAP who won a high position of power somewhere in South America, I feel like I would be doing everything I can to like signal to the feds and the CIA and the FBI that be like, I am not a threat. You do not need to do regime change here in Argentina. You know what I mean? Like, that's just like, as much as if you know the history of South America and all the interventions, all the regime change that we've done there, I'm like, I don't know. Like to me, it's at least plausible, right? Like he might be like, you know what? Like my job is to focus on Argentina, so I'm not going to fight battles on foreign policy. I'm just going to say what they're saying on the international level and just let them do their thing, so I can focus on do my thing here. I think that's at least a plausible explanation.
I actually that was pretty much my exact thought process, it goes back to just like playing the game, right? And again, it goes where a lot of libertarians don't want to go. And that is that it is a game. We don't want it to be a game, but it is a game. And if you're not playing it, somebody else will be playing it, whether you like it or not. Like I know we want our principles to be the ones that guide us to where we go, but like, that's just not how it works. Like, you have something to rely back on, but you have to bring those to the game. You just can't, you know, you just say, well, I'm not going to play. And then like, just like, you know, piss and moan and walk home. Like, okay, great. What did you actually accomplish? Nothing. Okay, great.
Yeah, exactly.
And rant.
Right. So I think, listen, it's like, and maybe the other thing is like, maybe he's just wrong. Maybe he's just wrong on foreign policy. It's like, okay, again, he's not in a position to do much about the foreign policy stuff anyway. Like, it's not like Argentina's got billions of you know, jets and missiles and stuff to sell to Israel or Ukraine right now, right? So it's like,
dude, they don't even have anything. He's just buying $700 million worth so they can actually have like something of their own personal defense. So
right.
Like that's just happening now. So yeah, they're not going out. They don't have a Lockheed Martin, I don't think, in Argentina, do they?
No, I don't think so. Cool. Well, Brian, this has been a lot of fun. Again, I'll have the link for your full article as well as the recent article in the show notes.
Awesome.
I highly recommend people checking out both of those, and also checking out your show as well, because they should. And you have your tag right there in your picture at @BNicholsLiberty. Nichols Liberty on X. Where else can people find you if they want to, you know, see the things that you write and the content you produce?
Awesome. Thanks, man. Yeah. So the Brian Nichols Show, that's the podcast. You can find it over on, let's see, it's powered by Amp America, which I'm very excited to be a part of. That's also where the article you're referring to here was written. You can find me over on YouTube, Rumble, X.com, as well as Facebook. For the video version of the show, for the podcast, I mean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, pretty much wherever you get your podcasts. I like to use Podcast Addict. I think it's more my style. There's a new one that just came out too. I forget what it's called, but it's like an AI podcast catcher, which I didn't think anybody would ever need, but it looks pretty cool. Like if you hear a part in a podcast you like, you hit a button and then it will like summarize exactly the area that you were listening to and put it to like a note section. That's just a whole different thing.
There's so many cool AI things coming out for people who listen to and make podcasts. It's just, it's insane.
Yeah. But no, as for me, yeah, at B Nichols Liberty, I'm really active over on Twitter, and I do a lot of fun fire memes over on Facebook. At least I'd like to think so. Also doing some new reels and stuff too. So I'm trying to get more into that game, showing some of the clips from the show. So hopefully if people watch some of those clips and they enjoy what they see, hit that subscribe button. Again, you can follow me over on YouTube. Again, all of it is at B Nichols Liberty or The Brian Nichols Show. So yeah, man, it's been a great time. Thanks for having me on the show, and really appreciate you being willing to have me on the show to articulate my thought process here of why I think that article is a little so thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. I'm glad to have you on. And this is what, for those who are listening, this is what this show is about. I like having people on and just talking about different topics that are going around our country, going on our world. And so if you haven't already, please make sure that you are, wherever you're watching, that you're subscribed or follow it, whether it's on, if it's YouTube, subscribe and like that, the video. If it's on Twitter, make sure that you are following me and the Libertarian Christian Institute so that you can keep up to date with our upcoming shows. I did have a show scheduled for Thursday with Ezra, but that Ezra had to reschedule. So I'm actually, instead, we're going to be doing an LCI roundtable on Thursday at probably about 7 o'clock, same time as this one. So keep tuned for details on that. And yeah, that's all I have for you guys. Thank you, Brian, for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And yeah, as I always say, until next time, live at peace, live for Christ.